Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All righty, hour number two. What's happening? Man, that's a busy hour. There is so much happening right now. The Braves with a couple of runners out there. They try to chisel away a few. They're down 2-0 to the Cards. Obviously, Redbirds a couple of home runs early, but the Braves are trying to battle back, so we got an eye on that. Obviously, a whole lot of football. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network. And we're live from our Tiki and Tierney studio, the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. And the Braves did tack one on, a sack fly that I thought may have been destined for the gap, but instead it's a line drive sack fly, so it's 2-1, and the Cardinals are on top of the Braves. We'll keep an eye on that. Obviously, we'll move into the game tonight, which will be all sorts of revealing for the Browns. You know, where are they? And really, do we need to take the San Francisco 49ers seriously? I think you have to, especially without Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams playing tonight for the Browns. That secondary's banged up. But that place should be popping. College was hopping over the weekend, and we thought it would be a great day to get Danny Cannell, Tiki's former teammate, obviously a former college star, playing in the NFL as well. You see him on CBS Sports HQ. He's a football analyst. He's part of the CBS Sports Network crew as well. Danny Cannell is in the house. What up, Danny? How are you?
What's going on, Brandon? Tiki, how are you guys doing? I'm so glad you guys called at this exact moment because I was just getting into some Twitter beef with some Ohio State Buckeyes blog, and it's driving me nuts. So I'm glad you guys interrupted that because nothing good comes.
No, Danny, stop it. Bring the beef to the Tiki and Tierney airways. What were you beefing about? What was going on?
Let me guess. They're saying this is the best Ohio State team that they've ever seen, and that, you know, Day has done an amazing job. He's better than, you know, Urban Meyer, and Justin Fields is going to win the Heisman Trophy.
They're
right?
Better than Bama.
Yes, they are. They're getting a little chesty. They want to puff out their chest and start talking a little bit, and they deserve to, right? They've been awesome, including another win that they chalked up against Michigan State, which to me was probably the best test they've had this year. And so that's one thing they've been bothered by. I have them ranked at number 3 in my poll that I do every week. And apparently that isn't high enough, but their biggest beef is that I still have Clemson at 1, and call me old-fashioned, it doesn't make a lot of sense. It's just kind of a thing that I've done for the past 7 or 8 years. I think if you're the defending national champion, if you have won 20 games in a row, if you still have your coach and both your coordinators intact, if you still have your quarterback returning and a lot of offensive weapons, and even if you don't really, I still do it. But if you won the national championship, I feel like you have the right to defend your spot. And Clemson dropped in the polls because of a couple weeks ago, they looked bad against North Carolina. But guess what they didn't do? They didn't lose.
Yep.
So they're still undefeated, and that just kind of bothers me that we get so cute with these polls, and they don't matter. They're kind of dumb. But, like, when people start dropping Clemson to the 7th and 8th spot, I'm like, really? You guys are going to hold them that much against them? I get it wasn't pretty, but they're still an incredibly talented team. So that's what my beef with Ohio State is. They're mad at me because I still have Clemson 1. And I get it. Like, hey, if you said, who do you think would win, Clemson versus Ohio State? I think that's a different conversation, and maybe I would pick Ohio State. But, man, you would think I, like, disrespected everyone's mom by the amount of disrespect they feel has been shown him. All because I have Ohio State at 3, mind you. 3.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like you dropped them out of the top 10. Look, they have a bye week this weekend, and they play Northwestern, a game they should win, even though it's on the road and it's pesky Northwestern. And they play Wisconsin, and that's when it will matter. They'll face Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins, who actually has more rushing yards on the season than Jonathan Taylor, will give us some interest. But let me jump over to Clemson since we were talking about them briefly. What do you think is the issue with their – I mean, because, look, they're winning, and that's all that matters. But they don't feel like the same team that we saw destroy their way through the college football playoffs last year, and that's including against Alabama. What's different about them this year?
So, Tiki, I think we're seeing a phenomenon develop like in the college ranks where it's really, really hard to repeat as national champion. And for whatever reason, teams get kind of complacent, and they just kind of start going through the motion. It's funny because Ohio State, back in 2015, after they won the championship in 2014, they had a similar type season to what Clemson is having now. Mm-hmm. They kind of were sluggish through the regular season, and then they ended up losing, and didn't get in. So then Alabama wins a national championship. Then they look sluggish, and Clemson comes up and takes the national championship. And guess what Bama did? They woke up, and they got fired up. And then they knocked out Clemson out of the playoff 2 years ago. And then, by the way, guess what happened last year? Clemson has all those guys return from the defensive side of the ball. They're on a mission, right? And they achieve their mission. And they go on to win the national championship. And now, guess what? Like, Ohio State kicked off. They were left out. Bama's mad. They got beat. I don't know what it is, but there's something about the focus level and the intensity level and the sense of urgency that teams that don't win the championship have. And for whatever reason, we're seeing this trend creep in. It's human nature. It's, you know, whatever you want to call it.
18, 19-year-olds.
Yeah, it's hard for them to stay amped up. So yeah. I would say Clemson looks sloppy. They don't look as interested. I think they assume they're going to win because they do have more talent. And you know how this is. I mean, they have more talent, but if you come out and you sleepwalk through games, you're going to get picked off. But I still feel like if they get things back on track, which they could, they're still one of the best teams in the country, but they better wake up or wake up in a hurry or else they'll get knocked off, even with a pretty easy schedule remaining.
And, Danny, by the way, the difference is, you know, back in the day, and I'm sure you did this, Teak, I don't know if you and Rondé did this. I used to do this with both football and hoops. You know, they didn't find out how great they were until SI put out the season preview.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, wow, let me read about myself. I am great. Now they could just search their own names and they can find out how great they are by the hour. So that's probably adding to the complacency a bit. But I think we'd be remiss, Danny. That's Danny Cannell, of course, 8 years in the NFL, CBS Sports HQ, Tiki's former teammate. If we didn't at least get Danny Cannell's line of delineation, how, in terms of being championship viable, how many teams are you willing to stretch down? Now, obviously, Auburn didn't look good. We go in 7. We go in 8. You count in Wisconsin. Do you give Penn State a shot? Where's your cutoff line for teams that you think have a puncher's chance to win the title?
So, Brandon, what I've started to do to kind of help myself, like, kind of put these teams. So, I put them in tiers. And where I've made an adjustment, I did make an adjustment 2 weeks ago when Clemson struggled a little bit. It used to be Alabama and Clemson were in their own tier, their own stratosphere, if you will, at the top of college football. And over the last, like, the course of this season, I've said, you know what? They don't look quite as dominant as they thought they would be.
Mm-hmm.
So my top tier is really 6 teams. And it's Bama, Clemson. It's really the top 6 in the AP poll, too. It's Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia, LSU, and Oklahoma. And then there's the second tier, which I do think they're capable, you know, and that would include the Florida Gators. That's Wisconsin, as you mentioned. That's even Notre Dame, who looks pretty good in the loss. Penn State is flying under the radar. Texas is still in that conversation. Auburn and Oregon. So that's the 13. That would be the second tier. There is no way I'm picking anybody outside of the top 13 to win the national championship.
Okay.
And even in that second tier, I wouldn't put a meaningful amount of money on them. Maybe if you want to get some odds and take a flyer and say, hey, maybe Notre Dame runs the table. They correct some of their issues. They looked pretty good against Georgia. They could get in. Penn State might take a flyer on them. They've looked really good against, really haven't played anybody yet, but really I do firmly believe that the national champion is going to come from one of those top 6 teams. With LSU being that team that's kind of new to this conversation, they've got a great test this weekend against the Florida Gators, who are going to Baton Rouge. The Gators just beat Auburn, but LSU has something they haven't had over the past 20 years, and that's an offense that is lighting people up.
Yeah.
And so that's why I kind of feel like LSU is this dark horse that hasn't been in this conversation recently because they haven't been able to get past Bama. But I feel they're a little bit different this year. So that's a team that I kind of like in that top 6. It's kind of flying under the radar.
Yeah, that's because of Joe Burrow and the fact that they play at lightning fast pace with their offense. But a team that I know you loathe talking about, because back in your day as a Seminole, it was an actual rivalry. It's not much of a rivalry anymore. The Florida Gators, they're actually playing fantastic defense, allowing less than 9 points a game on that side of the ball. They just beat this Auburn team, as we were just talking about. But it really felt like their viability, to BT's question, changed when Felipe Franks, you hate to root for injury, but I mean, once he got hurt and Kyle Trask became their quarterback, they feel like a different squad. Well, why is it so different for Florida with Trask, who shouldn't be this good, but he is?
It's easy, Tiki. It's one word. It's consistency. You know what you're going to get with Kyle Trask. He's been really, that term game manager is used as an insult sometimes, but really Peyton Manning was the best game manager that the sport has ever seen. Like, that should be a compliment.
Yeah.
And that's what you get with Kyle Trask. You know he's going to put you in good positions. He's not going to give you foolish turnovers. He's tough, as we saw, as he got knocked out of the game. And he just has a way of kind of making plays and not making the big mistake. And what you get with that team, when you have a defense that's that talented, you can get away with that. Now, that's my big question is, can they still win with this game manager against LSU, who I think is going to put up some points against Florida? And I do think that's going to hold Florida back somewhat. But I think they're way ahead of the ball when you look at Dan Mullen being hired. They brought him in specifically to develop the offense, and the offense has been much better. And he's maximizing his quarterback. I mean, Dan Mullen is the ultimate quarterback whisperer, if you will, going back to when he developed Alex Smith at Utah, Tim Tebow at Florida when he was the offensive coordinator, Dak Prescott when he was coaching at Mississippi State, and now he's doing it with a career backup in Kyle Trask. We shouldn't be surprised, but I do think it's a credit to Dan Mullen and his skills that he brings as this quarterback guru, if you will.
So we're talking to Danny Cannell, and Danny, part of the crew here, CBS Sports Network, CBS Sports HQ, and he's with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, former quarterback, of course, 8 years in the NFL. You know, I don't need to exhaust this, but I really want to get your opinion on one thing that I did see that gets buried because they wound up getting waxed. And I know we already touched on Georgia, but I was bouncing around going through a lot of games, as we all do on Saturdays, right? And I happened to catch Tennessee at the right time when, I don't even know if you say it Moore or Maurer. Brian Moore, the freshman quarterback. Is it Moore?
Moore, yeah.
Okay. And I see him uncork a 72-yard bomb, and he's a true freshman. His mom and dad are going bonkers in the stands, which is great. I'm like, let me check on this kid. And I went and did a little research on Rivals and 24/7 Sports to see who was recruiting him. Three-star kid, 6'3", 190. He's got to put on some weight, obviously. But none of the blue bloods, seemingly, at least from the info that I came across, were pursuing him with any sort of vigor. He looked good. I know they got smoked. I get that. But is he Tennessee's quarterback of the future? Because what I saw, I thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's why they went to him, too, because they just made the switch, Jeremy Pruitt did, from Jarek Guaratondo, who's been their starter for a couple years now, maybe even 3 years. But they started off the season really rough. They were 1-3, and Guaratondo just looked like he had a crisis of confidence. He had been shot. In his defense, they've been through two head coaches and four offensive coordinators and four quarterback coaches. Like, I can't even fathom that.
Ugh.
I was lucky enough to play for one head coach, one coordinator, one quarterback coach. Like, it's tough to learn when you're getting new systems everywhere. But I do think, like, this switch was made to start looking for the future. And Brian Moore is a little bit more athletic, which is the trend of the game. We're getting quarterbacks who can do more outside the pocket. And that's clearly what they did. But to answer your question, he's the quarterback of the future. I think he's the quarterback for the rest of this year. And then Tennessee's just in the spot where they're going to be recruiting guys, trying to find, maybe they get a five-star. Maybe Brian Moore is that guy and he can hold off any kind of contenders there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they know who the quarterback of the future is. Even with Moore, even if he excels this year,
mm-hmm.
I think this program is really struggling right now to kind of get this thing turned around. Maybe it's him, but I wouldn't say that definitively. Hey, this is the guy for the future.
Okay, that's good intel. I didn't know. Yeah. I was curious. Good job on that, Danny.
Does Pruitt survive year two?
I hope so. Like, a few weeks ago we were talking, you know, in the national landscape about Willie Taggart. Does he survive year two? Jeremy Pruitt, does he survive year two? Chip Kelly at UCLA, does he survive year two? We're in year two. Like, do people realize how foolish that sounds?
Yeah, of course. But, you know, he's trying to influence cops, though, Danny.
That is true. Now, that one is pretty rough, and he did kick off the kid off the team this past weekend.
Yeah, he did.
But you know how it works.
Yeah, of course.
If you win, you're going to get a lot of those more excused. I would say, just from a strictly football-speaking standpoint, that you'd be crazy to fire a coach after just 2 years. Like, you're tying his hands. He hasn't even got his recruits through there. But if it goes sideways and they go 2-10, you see that type of year.
Oof.
Same thing with Florida State, which Florida State looks like it's dodged that kind of year so far, but they have Clemson this week, so who knows what's going to happen. Or if UCLA looks like they could be on pace for maybe a 2-10 year, you never know. But even still, I would say you have to evaluate the program itself. Are the players responding? Are you recruiting well? Are guys leaving the program? That's when I think you have more of a problem. And it is tougher than ever to appease fans when you're making $4 and $5 million. They don't have much patience, and I get it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense because you are starting from scratch again.
Yeah.
And it makes it so tough. So, yeah, I think Jeremy Pruitt survived, But it's going to be a bumpy ride on the way there for sure.
Hey, one last one for you, Danny. Let's go out west real quick. Stanford.
Yep.
Surprisingly beat Washington over the weekend, and we had this, we always have this conversation about the strength and or mostly the weakness of the Pac-12. Oregon had a big win over Cal this weekend. I'm not playing great in that game, but they found a way to win it. They're sitting at 4-1. They probably have the best chance here, but are they going to beat each other up, or is this conference stronger, or are they still weak? I don't know how to really evaluate the Pac-12 after 5 weeks of the college football season.
So, see, I'm wondering if Seth Edelstein, our producer over there at CBS Sports Network, put you up to this question. He probably didn't. You're just a smart guy. But I was wrong in such a big way on Stanford this past weekend because we were previewing all these college games, and they were playing against Washington, and I was like, why are we on air? I'm like, this game's going to be a joke. Washington's going to roll. Stanford's awful this year. They got blown out by UCF. I'm sitting there just railing on Stanford. They go and beat Washington. And I think it's a combination, Tiki. I don't think Stanford is great this year. Clearly Washington is great, but I think there's a lot of good football teams in the Pac-12. Oregon really is becoming their last hope to make the playoff, and I think Oregon's a really good football team. David Shaw is kind of struggling this year, but that was a big win for them, and it's kind of this cannibalization of the Pac-12, which we see more prevalent in the conferences that play nine conference games. I think that's a big, you know, kind of takeaway for me when I look at the Pac-12. When the SEC and ACC are playing eight conference games, and usually that extra game where the Pac-12 is playing a conference foe, the SEC or ACC are playing like these directional schools. They're favored by four touchdowns. It's an easy win. And then the Pac-12 starts beating each other up, and they start falling out of the top 25. It's like, God, that conference isn't any good. And I would just be cautious making that sort of a blanket statement on the Pac-12 because they have a lot of pretty good football teams. What they desperately need is a Clemson from the ACC. The ACC is struggling, but at least they have Clemson. The SEC has always had Bama. You know, the Big 12 has had Oklahoma. The Pac-12 desperately needs that team that can get through, and it's probably going to have to be with one loss, and it's probably going to have to be Oregon in order to stay relevant in the national conversation, or else they just kind of get left in the dust and people forget about them.
Danny Cannell, one of the great collegiate careers, 8 years in the NFL, played with Teague for a little bit as well, and CBS Sports HQ, CBS Sports Network. I catch him a little bit. Say hi to your boy Tori for us. You guys do a good job. I like
it. You got it, man. I will for sure, Brandon. I absolutely will.
Good chatting with you, Danny.
Appreciate you, buddy.
You too, Teague. See you guys.
There you go.
Hey, man, if they hadn't lost to Auburn, that was the game. It was a tight game, too. 27-21, I believe, was the final score.
Talking about Oregon. That was the Labor Day game.
Yep, that was the one game that they've lost. Other than that, they haven't played great in all of them, but they found ways to win. But, yeah, I think he's right. That Auburn loss, I don't know how to evaluate it now. I think
certainly Auburn, less favorably than we would have on Friday before Auburn lost to Florida.
That
changes things a bit.
That's right.
You know?
It does.
We have a short segment coming up, so let's break now. We'll react to all the things that Danny said, throw a few more new things out there as well pertaining to college football. Then we're going to jump to Kurt Warner. Kurt's going to join us. He is out there in San Francisco area, the Browns and the Niners tonight. He's on the call for Westwood One, so a whole lot of football, which we're sure is good with everybody. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
All righty, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227, brought to you by GEICO. Great news. There's a quick way to save money. Just switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, save 15% or more on car insurance. Dallas Keuchel getting victimized again. Mr. Ozuna going yard. Second bomb of the day for him. And the Cardinals are up 3-1, and that is in the bottom of the fourth. So, obviously, a big one for the Redbirds. If they lose, they're done. Atlanta's up 2-1. You know, this is going to sound very blasphemous. I get it. I say this almost completely in jest. Not kind of. Almost fully in jest. But would it be such a bad idea if we could trade Ohio State to the SEC? I mean, can't we just do that? And can't we just let Michigan and Michigan State and all these other boring offenses like Iowa, let them fight it out for the Big Ten crowd. Let Ohio State go play with the varsity.
I got to tell you,
Big Ten stinks.
It really is boring to watch them. That Iowa-Michigan game was one of the more difficult
Dude, it's like watching something from 1952.
Top 15 games in football to watch.
It was so atrocious.
In an old school way, it was kind of great.
No, it was great in no way.
But not
90,
really.
That's what I mean.
That's what I mean. Like, oh, great defense. Did you see that?
Yeah.
I hear you. It was frustrating to watch.
What was the score? 10-7?
10-3.
10-3. Yeah, 10-3. They had fewer than 300 yards total offense.
Yep.
At home. Off a bye week.
I know it.
I mean, wow, that is just
what
ugly,
happened to this vaunted
ugly stuff. Ugly stuff.
Harbaugh offense that we expected to come at some point. It's never coming, dude.
At this point, the more they play, first of all, they're going backwards in terms of being modern, being innovative.
Yeah.
Each week they look further and further removed from big picture viability and, quite frankly, something that any sort of great young athlete would want to be a part of.
That's right.
I don't mean the Michigan Man brand, which is great. I don't mean the academics, which are great. Yep. I don't mean the big house, which is phenomenal. I mean all the other stuff. Like, that's somewhat ancillary. I mean, education is not ancillary. But, I mean, once you step on the field and you run through the tunnel, who the hell wants to play that kind of football?
Yeah.
10 points against Iowa.
No.
I know Iowa's okay. Let's lease Ohio State to the SEC for a couple and see how it goes. Can we do that?
That would be interesting.
I'll even take it to the ACC.
I don't know. You don't want them.
I don't want that.
You definitely don't want them.
I don't want another dominant team.
Oh, man.
Look, with the game of the weekend that everybody was looking forward to was Auburn, Florida. We hit it a little bit with Danny. Florida is surprising me because after week one, you know, this is, you know, with all due respect, D-Cell, to your Miami Hurricanes.
They don't deserve any respect. Why would you even say that?
Because he's a Miami Hurricanes fan.
I know, but he even knows deserve any respect.
But I thought Florida was more on par with the Miami.
Did you really?
After week one? And, like, some of the dumb mistakes. They tried to give the game away to the Hurricanes. And that, I think that was actually week zero, wasn't it?
That was definitely week zero. Yes, I was trying to get him to bet the game.
Yeah.
Remember, take the points. And they covered. Miami would have won you some money. But that was definitely week zero.
So I had, like less than positive thoughts about the Florida Gators.
Mm-hmm.
And I was waiting for a game like this for them to prove it. And I honestly expected them, and I know D-Cell did as well because he's a Miami fan. He's like, oh, Florida's not that good. I expected them to get waxed a little bit.
I did too.
And
we said it on the air.
They surprised me. And Danny Cannell hit on it, and he's right. When they switched to Kyle Trask, and it was by, not luck, but whatever, injury, they become more consistent. He's completing 72% of his passes. When he has to make a throw, he makes a throw. He's never out there guessing where he's supposed to go with the football. And you throw that on top of the top five defense in college football, and, you know, they're giving up 8.8 points a game. 8.8 points a game. I mean, they've been fantastic on the defensive side of the ball. And what we're starting to see with Ohio State, who's fourth in the nation in points per game at, I think, 7.9, And Florida, defense is still very important in a sport where we tend to focus only on the offensive side of the ball. Florida impressed me, and I think I'm keeping them outside of the favorites.
Mm-hmm.
But if they beat LSU and, you know, end up getting into the SEC championship game, how can you not take them seriously?
Well, no, you have to. You have to certainly take them more seriously than we did all last week when we basically said multiple times that Auburn's going to win this game.
Yep.
Now, we didn't make a mockery of it. We never said it was going to be, you know, 20 points. I don't even know that we even really gave it much in terms of a final spread. We just thought that Auburn was a little bit better than Florida,
yep,
a little bit more advanced, a little bit more polished, certainly offensively. Gators defense, they crank it up. Tiki is absolutely right. I was very surprised. I actually recorded this, and I parachuted because we had a lot of things going on, obviously. And I parachuted in, and I didn't want to just jump into the game and miss the beginning, so I rewound it. And I was very surprised how this game started out. The one thing I will say, if there's a day to prop up Florida or a week, it's this week. Because as Tiki just said, now you play at LSU, and that's a night game. You know, the LSU fans weren't thrilled they had to play an afternoon game against Utah State, and they handled biz. They put 42-6. They did what they had to do. So it's quite conceivable. We're sitting here next Monday, and Florida loses. Am I going to get burned again on Florida? Say 40-13. I mean, I don't know. It's not out of the realm of possibility. And then say even if they come back and they beat South Carolina, and they probably should, then they got to play Georgia the next week.
Yeah.
So they can conceivably get blown out two of the next three games, and it changes the entire tone of their season. Or they can continue to make us look like idiots,
right,
which you and I look like right now because we gave no respect last week, and that was our bed, and we'll own up to it. We'll take it on the chin. And they make something far more meaningful out of the season than anybody envisioned.
Yeah,
look, props to them.
If they beat the two of the top five teams in the country, in LSU and Georgia, they're winning. They're finishing out the season undefeated. They're going to be in the SEC championship. They're going to play likely Alabama. I mean, Auburn can play spoiler right now to some of these teams that they have to play down the stretch. But it's likely to be Florida, Alabama in the SEC championship. And if they mess around and win, improbably, Florida's going to be in the in college football playoff.
Now we're getting a little nuts. Now we're smoking a little bit of Jay Gruden stuff.
Can they beat Georgia? Can they beat Georgia? Yes, because Georgia's not.
At Georgia?
Because they're not.
Pardon me.
Is that Florida? Is that Florida? It's at Florida.
Okay.
It is at LSU.
It's at LSU, for sure.
That's the more daunting one for me. But Georgia, I mean, I like Jake Fromm, but they're not, like, overly explosive. They're not blowing you out. You know what I mean? They're not.
Georgia's going to beat them.
I think so. But I thought that Auburn was going to beat Florida.
But are you reacting to...
I'm reacting to the fact that their defense is fast and athletic and opportunistic.
Fine.
And they don't give up points. I mean, I don't care who they're playing.
No, I got
you. They don't give up points.
They don't.
And they're smart and they're disciplined. And they have a quarterback that doesn't make mistakes. And so it's hard to, you know, flip the script so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But this LSU game, which is next week, it's a late game, it's 8 p.m., been prime time. Everybody will be watching it. That's the one where if they find a way to win, I mean, you got to start getting your Florida Gators, you know, college football playoff memorabilia ready, because seriously, if they beat Georgia, they're winning out. Vanderbilt, Missouri, and Florida State.
You can start printing those shirts, but it's going to go to a third world country for the impoverished because nobody in America is going to see those shirts because they ain't going to get them.
Hey, I was a doubter, but after watching this game, I was impressed.
Well, listen, I was impressed to the point, and I felt compelled enough to kind of come, with a little head solemnly bowed down in sadness and humility, where on Tops yesterday, on my segment, Tierney's Take, I always end up with a college item, but I really don't do it until Sunday morning. That's the only thing that I write on Sunday, because obviously I need for the whole Saturday to transpire, so I'll write it early on Sunday. I said, I got to give Florida a pop. And, you know, I went through some of their recent history. I mean, they had a 3-win season, a 4-win season.
No, they've been bad.
They got their guy. They got their coach. There's no doubt they got their coach. And I ended it with, you know what? When the Florida Gators, when they're good, college football is better.
Mm-hmm.
They've got one of those brands, so it's all good. I still don't take them that seriously in terms of big picture championship, but I got to shut up for now because they beat a team I did not think they would beat. Nicely done, Gators. All right, coming up, we'll get Axe update. Kurt Warner, he's on the call tonight. What do we get for a little Baker Jimmy G? Looking forward to that matchup, and we'll find out more. Axe got the baseball. Looks like the Cardinals and the Braves are moving to the middle frame, so we got it all. Axe update is right now. Here's Rich Ackerman.
You're listening to Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, Kurt Warner is up next here. We'll talk about the game tonight. He's on the call. First up, though, time for Doing More, brought to you by The Home Depot. Visit homedepot.com for details on flooring, appliances, and bathroom home improvement. It's The Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Justin Turner been raking. Feasting on Nats pitching through the first three games of the NLDS. Turner, how about these Gordy numbers? 357 average, two doubles, a bomb, four ribbies. And how about this? In the division series, he's a career 416 hitter, and he's been there six times. So that's a lot of at-bats. He is just he's a good player. Turner and the Dodgers trying to close out the Nats tonight, game four in D.C. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM, Channel 206. On Twitter, Tiki and Tierney. At Tiki Barber, at Brandon Tierney, radio.com, YouTube. Just type in Tiki and Tierney. All the stuff will come up. Of course, Apple, iTunes, a lot of ways to connect with your show and stay in the realm of Tiki and Tierney. Tiki, this is going to be a fun game tonight. It'll be a lot of fun. Two teams, a little something to prove for different reasons. Monday Night Football, not in San Francisco, about 40 miles away. It's Levi's Stadium. And to help us break it down, he's on the call tonight with Kevin Kugler for Westwood One. Hall of Famer, two-time MVP, and Tiki's former teammate, the great Kurt Warner. Kurt, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Awesome, man. Awesome.
Kurt was a teammate for half a season, basically. He was mentoring Eli.
Hey.
Everybody thought you were done, Kurt. You went out to Arizona and beasted it out there. Your career was amazing. Actually, it's one of the ones to be proud of because what you stand for and everything that you've done in your life. So we appreciate you for that.
I appreciate it, buddy.
But also for joining us now. Talk about this game. Now, I know you've done the research and the pre-game, the pre-meetings and production meetings and et cetera. When you sat down, have you sat down with the Cleveland Browns? I'm wondering what the attitude is you get from them. Is it cocky? Is it confident? You know, what do they feel like? Because we can talk about it from afar, but until you're in the room with those guys, you don't really feel it. What are they like?
Well, I mean, I think there's a little of both, and you know, any good team that you're on, there's always a little of both. You got to have confidence. I mean, without a doubt, you have to have confidence, and I believe this team does have confidence from you know, Freddie Kitchens on down, you know, Baker and OBJ. There's a lot of confidence in you know, in the locker room for the Browns. But I think there's also a little cocky, and again, I don't think that's a bad thing, as long as it doesn't get too big and doesn't blow up and you start reading your own press clippings. Mm-hmm. You have to believe that when your backs are against the wall, or when nobody thinks you have a chance, or when everybody wants to, you know, knock you down because there was so much hype in the offseason, you got to believe that you can shut people up and you can prove to them that you are, you know, what everybody was talking about, or you are what you think you are. And so I think there's a touch of both. I would probably say there's a little more humility now than there was, you know, going into the season, because there was a big hype train around these guys. And you know, we talk all about the talent and the shiny toys on the outside, and it hasn't quite played out like that as they're trying to put things together. But, you know, the great thing is they're 2-2, and they got an opportunity, if they win tonight, to be, you know, number one in their division, even after a slow start. So a lot of stuff going on here, but I think they feel like they've settled in a little bit these last couple weeks.
Now, you talk about, you know, them settling in, and we knew it would happen eventually. There's just too much talent on their team for them to be, you know, bad, so to speak. But as you broke down the film on Baker in particularly, what's different in that Ravens game that we didn't really see in the Titans game, or even in the Rams game? What was so different about last week, and they hung 40 on the Baltimore Ravens, who have a pretty decent defense?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing was it started with the run game. You know, I felt like earlier in the year, they were also trying to live up to that hype a little bit. You know, Freddie Kitchens being a new, you know, coordinator, head coach type position. You know, now I got to, you know, play up to what we did at the end of last year. And Baker having a great, you know, stretch there at the end of last year. Man, I got to show people that I can play at that level. And they got a little bit away from what really made them good last year, and that was run first and play action. And then make the drop back part of the game the secondary part of it. I felt earlier in the year it was more, hey, let's drop back and show people we can play and throw it to all these guys on the outside. And last week they got back to run first and play action. And I think Baker settled in a little bit too. I think the one thing that we missed because of all the great pieces they have is that their offensive line hasn't played nearly as well this year as it did last year when Baker was in there. They went a number of games without giving up any sacks, and you know, things were just a little bit easier. Baker, not as much protection. He's bailing out of the pocket, I think, a little bit too quickly on a lot of plays. And I think last week they went back to getting the ball out of his hands quick, designing some quick things, and then taking their shots with play action. And it really was what made them good last year, and they got back to that a little bit more last week.
So we're talking to Kurt Warner. Kurt's on the call tonight. He's going to be at Levi's Stadium, which should have a nice energy, an energy that building's been searching for since it opened, and they left Candlestick. He's on the call with Kevin Kugler on Westwood One. You know, Kurt, you know what I wanted to ask you? Independent of draft status and independent of contract status, aside from the hype, and even independent of offensive line play, just in terms of sheer toolbox, right? When you look at Garoppolo on film versus Baker Mayfield on film, who's got more tools in the toolbox, so to speak?
Man, that's a great question. I think they both have everything you would want in the toolbox. I think, you know, Jimmy's got an unbelievably quick release. I love that. He plays with great balance. Baker, maybe not as quick a release, but he also plays with great balance. He's got a big-time arm. He's really, really good on the run. You know, that both these guys will sling it, and they'll make some really, really tough throws. And then if there's one knock to me on both of them, it's that sometimes they try to make every throw, try to jam every throw in there, and they make some bad decisions with it. And, you know, that's really what both of them need to clean up. But I'm not sure either one has a bunch of weaknesses when you're talking about skill set or things that they can't do. I really like both of these guys from that standpoint.
Okay, good stuff.
Yeah, you know, Kurt, let's switch over to Dak Prescott, who, You know, we've seen him look really good this at points this year. Yesterday he was bad. Now maybe that was just to chalk it up to a bad game. They didn't run the ball particularly effectively, especially early, and they were down, so they had to throw the ball a ton. Where do you evaluate him in his progress to being one of the top quarterbacks in the league? We know there's a lot hanging over this team. They were a preseason, or at least early part of this season, favorite to get to the Super Bowl. You know, he's playing for a contract. Where is he at right now in his development?
Well, I mean, you know, I think you look at a couple of things. First thing, you look at leadership. And I don't think there's any question that he's a big-time leader and a guy that can represent your organization as a franchise guy. So that's where it starts. And I think they love him from that standpoint. I think as far as within the structure of what their team has been, he's really good. You know, when you can keep a game close and he can give you wins late in a game, that is a huge, you know, check mark that you have to make. Kind of like a Russell Wilson. You know, that team is always in the game. And if you make it a one-possession game, they're going to win a lot more than they lose. That's where Dak's been. The real true question to me when you're talking about a franchise quarterback is, can they carry a team? When everything else isn't working, can they put the team on their right arm and, you know, go throw 35 and 40 times and keep their team in games every single week? That is the box that we haven't checked yet. And that's where it gets so hard because, you know, contracts are ridiculous now. You know, mm-hmm. $35 million a year for these quarterbacks. And if you're kind of slated, you know, in there or you're the next guy up, you just get that money even if you haven't proven that yet. And it's really hard because, I mean, you know, we're talking about a guy that's in his fourth year in the league. And, you know, go back and look at Tom Brady. Go back and look at Ben Roethlisberger. Go back and look at these guys in their third, fourth, fifth year. They weren't the guys they are now either. And so the hard part is, okay, he's checked some really good boxes, but he hasn't checked all the boxes. And now it's come a time where we got to pay him based on that last box that he hasn't checked. And so as the Dallas Cowboys, you have to try to figure that out. Do you truly believe he can be that guy? And, you know, beginning of the year, everybody's like, oh, yeah, look at this. You know, he can be that guy, and he's doing it. And then he played, you know, two teams where they don't run the ball very well, and they struggle to score points, and they struggle to put drives together and to make those consistently big plays. And so now do you take a step back and go, okay, maybe he's not that guy right now. And, you know, for Jerry Jones, it's going to have to be probably, we don't know if he's going to be that guy or not. Do we think he's going to be? And if we do, we're going to pay him $35 million a year. Mm. And if they don't, I don't even know. I mean, it's so hard because when you have a guy that checks some of those other boxes,
yeah,
it's tough to pass on that guy in hopes you can find another guy that you think can check more boxes. But that's really going to be the decision that Dallas has to make. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see. But I think Dak's a better quarterback than a lot of guys in this league. But he's not quite there yet in terms of proving to us that he can be that guy.
Yeah, no, we're still waiting for him to be that guy. You know, the record against teams with winning records and his stat line is, you know, not commensurate with that of a superstar. Still, it is relatively early in his career. I get that. It's Kurt Warner, of course, the great Kurt Warner. Hall of Famer, he's on the call tonight. He's got the Niners and the Browns. Kevin Kugler, Westwood One. Kurt, final thing for me, probably 30, probably about a minute or so, maybe a little bit less here. The Redskins are a disaster. You don't need to waste time on that. But how should they handle Dwayne Haskins the rest of the season?
I mean, I think, to me, it's always about if you think he's somewhat ready to play, he can go out and compete for himself as much as for the organization, you put him in. I mean, they're at that point now where you play the young guy and you get prepared for the future more than anything. But if you don't feel like he can succeed, if you're putting him out there and you feel like he's, you know, he's underwater with what you're asking him to do, which kind of looked like where he was when he played against the Giants a couple weeks ago, I think the smart move is to pull back, and even if everybody wants him to play, just kind of go, he's not ready yet, and we're going to get him ready. So when we put him out there, we feel like we're putting him in a position to succeed. And it really feels like to me when all you talk about him, you know, from all the different coaches now, is he's not quite ready to be the starter yet. And I think if that's the case, then you continue to sit him until he's ready.
Hey, listen, man, we know you're juggling a lot. It's game day. We really appreciate you hopping on. Kurt Warner, thank you very much, Kurt.
No problem, guys. Anytime.
Appreciate you, my friend.
Okay. Kurt Warner, Hall of Famer. He's on the call tonight. Westwood One.
Kurt's the man.
That was a lot of good stuff there. Yeah. He's such a nice guy. I totally agree with sentiment.
I wish I wish we had another 5 or 10 minutes with him, because I want to ask if he thinks, and we'll talk about this on the other side of this break. It'll just be our opinion. But from a former quarterback who's been high and low.
Very.
I forget that. In his career, Kurt Warner. Is he in danger? Dwayne Haskins in danger of falling into this, purgatory? I don't know. You don't have a coach. You don't have, direction. What's the plan for you? Does the organization still love you?
Well, his growth has definitely been stagnated. Put it that way, at the minimum.
We've seen this before, BT.
I know.
And it doesn't work out well, usually.
Let's get more into it coming up. Tiki and Tierney, third hour, coming up. CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.